This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Good evening, this is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode 115 of Within the Trenches. And this episode is sponsored by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. So this week has been, it's been pretty crazy. But before I get to everything that's been going on this week, I want to introduce my guest, and my guest is going to be my brother, my real brother, Fernando. What's going on, man?
In real life, yes. Not much, man. Here.
Welcome back to the fort. You've been in Illinois like all week, right?
Yep, I have been, definitely.
what's like the drive time from there?
It depends on if I feel like stopping to get gas or using the bathroom or going to eat food. If I decide to not do any of those things and just drive and pee in my pants, you'll get there a lot faster.
Sheesh.
It's like 5 hours. If the traffic sucks, 6 hours. And then if I decide to eat, it could be longer, but it's like 5-6 hours.
Is there a lot of tolls and stuff through there?
Straight up is 5 hours. No, not really. There's a few of them, but I have a pass, so it's easier.
Well, that's good.
But not really, because on the way back, that pass was kind of like not good because everybody had one.
Right.
We'll get to that later. Yeah, it was insane. There was so much traffic. It was crazy.
That sucks. Well, the reason I have my brother on is because there's a story that I'm going to be telling here that he was kind of involved in towards the end of it. At the end of it, but I told him about it as well. And it was something that I needed to talk to him about after taking a call from back when I was in dispatch. But before that, I have a story. I had a little issue this week. You know, as I said, it was a crazy week. And excuse me. It kind of hurts a little bit to talk right now because I had my wisdom tooth extracted from the top left. And
this week?
Just like 2 days ago.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, man.
I thought you were just saying that your tooth hurt or something.
No.
It's gone.
It's gone. Oh. Yeah, it was extracted. It was bad. It was to the point where the left side of my face got swollen. Now, it wasn't as bad.
Again?
Okay, he said again, and I'm going to play this episode, or not the entire episode, just the intro episode from episode 12. And this was like 2 years ago or so that my co-host at the time, Whitney, and I, we recorded this because I had an issue with one of my bottom molars.
I can see the picture and it makes you laugh.
If you want to see what I look like when my face was swollen on the right side,
watch It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown.
Shut up,
dude. His face on it.
That's so messed up. I kind of look like that. But go to Google and just search the Jabberlog and then space, I am obsessed with you. Not obsessed. Obsessed. I wrote all about it and the picture of me is on there. And so I'm going to play this part because Whitney and I talk about it and it was pretty funny and I might have to adjust the volume here, but I'll be putting it up here. So hold on one moment. Here it comes.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ricardo with Jabberlog on the JCast and I'm sitting here with my co-host Whitney and this is episode number 12 of Within the Trenches. What's going on?
Hey bro, how you feeling?
I'm feeling all right, I guess.
You look a lot less scary. You don't need a hunchback anymore.
I know. Oh,
so wrong.
Did you mention that to me on a text message or was it somebody else too?
I think we were kind of quietly talking about it behind your back. I mean, you're a buddy and everything, but there's a point there where we were like, he's looking rough.
Yes. Oh my God. I don't know. I was texting, I think I was texting Carl is what it was. Okay. I was texting him as well. And he was saying, all you need is a hunchback. And I thought, damn, that's that messed Carl. Up. Yes. For those who don't know, I'm sure you saw
yes.
the pictures that I was posting on the Jabberlog fan page. I ended up having an abscessed tooth. Just one tooth, and it destroyed my face. It was swollen. It was like someone farted in my mouth, and it just stayed open.
Again?
Yeah. Oh, and laughing like that kind of hurts. I can't do a big smile because it's still kind of tight and everything. So
it looks a lot less intense. I mean, there was a point there. Well, if we had to explain it to listeners who haven't seen it, I'm talking like baseball at one point.
Yeah.
That one evening where you were just.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So I can explain it like this. If you've ever gone into, and I'm pretty sure they still have them. If you go into the gas station or Walmart or something like that, and you see all the gum on the racks when you're checking out, and you see that big league chew.
That guy. Yes.
Yes. That guy. That's exactly what I look like. Yep. I look like I have a big old chop. Like my mom. Yeah. And, it was very painful.
It was just your face. Yeah.
I mean, my lip was stretched out so far on the right side that the pain was just, oh, I can't even explain the pain. It was just amazing. Not amazing good.
No, no. And you gave your wife a heart attack because at one point, I mean, Ricardo spent this weekend in and out of the oral surgeon. We were supposed to do an interview with another dispatcher on Wednesday and we had to cancel it because he was back and forth all weekend and he couldn't talk and he didn't work the first part of this week. And his wife, Becky, texted me and she's like, I don't know what I'm going to do. They told him that if it gets any worse, he'll have to go to the hospital. And I was like, I think it's about time he goes there anyways.
But yes.
They pulled it together.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting. Just sitting there and the dentist telling me, we're going to have to cut you open. And I thought, okay, well, just like along my gum line or is it, that's what you mean, right? And he said, oh yeah. He says, because you can always tell me no. However, if you let it go and just kind of play it by ear, then there's a possibility that it's going to start swelling down towards your neck. It's going to cut off your air supply and you could die.
Or you just go goiter.
Yeah. Just cut
I said,
it.
Well, right. I don't want that. I said, whatever you have to do. And he said, all right, well, here's the form.
I'll do it.
You know, it says all the risks and everything. And he says, but once again, if you let it go, you'll end up having major surgery and then the risks there are tenfold. And I said, nope. Signed it. And he's like, all right, let's do this. So I'm sitting there and I'm freaking out and I'm texting my wife and telling her, this is what's going to happen. This is what's going on. And she's sending me a message
as I'm texting.
Are you getting, because I had told her too, that a tooth might get pulled in the back. And she says, so are you getting your tooth pulled and you're getting cut open or just cut open and not the tooth pulled? And I'm trying to frantically text and everything else. And like my thumb cramped up and everything else because I was trying to do it so fast and I was freaking out. I was sweating and I got in the last thing just, no, they're not taking my tooth out. Yes, they're cutting me open right now. And I put my phone back in my pocket because they already hit me with like 3 or 4 shots to numb me up. But whenever I could bite down, I could still feel kind of the pain.
Yeah.
And I told him that. And he says, we'll wait a little bit longer. But it was only like 5 minutes that they waited. And then they came back in and I was biting again. And he says, look, you're going to be able to bite on your teeth and you're going to feel it. He says, but, you know, you're not going to feel the pain. I thought
you were going to feel pressure.
Right.
You're like, no, dude, I can really feel pain.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm laying back and they give the first.
Side note to anybody listening, if you have a weak stomach.
Oh, yeah. This is about to
this
get
This is about
intense.
To get real.
Yeah. Yeah, this is live on Spreaker and we're doing something a little different here. Let's see how this goes. But yeah, they laid me back and They handed him the scalpel, the first of 3 scalpels, actually. Whoa. And he just started cutting through and I couldn't feel anything at first. But then as he got deeper and I guess once every time he hit a pocket, it hurt even. I could feel the scalpel going in.
OK, I got to stop it there really quick just to say that I remember this vividly when he cut in and the first pocket popped.
Pockets.
It was like.
Like a pocket of goo.
Yes.
In your face.
Yeah, in the inside of my mouth. And I remember seeing it like blunk, like fly up and his
shit out of your mouth. Like,
right. And the dental assistant, she goes, it was so bad.
That is nasty.
Okay, we're continuing now.
So you just had like pockets of infection in your face.
Oh yeah, dude. That's how bad it was. This was This was 4 days worth of infection building up. See, the dentist that I went to begin with, they ended up telling me you need an emergency root canal. It wasn't swollen or anything, but it hurt like hell. And I said, okay, well, let's do this. I've got insurance. Let's do this. And they didn't do it there, but you know, they had like a specialist or something that they could refer me to. So they get a hold of them and they said, well, we don't have an opening until Thursday. And I said, so what do I do? Because you just told me I need an emergency root canal. And they said, well, we can give you some pain meds and some penicillin. And I said, okay, by that time, it's going to be bad. Well, I said, okay, fine. I'll take the Thursday. So I go into dispatch, and by the end of the night, it was starting to swell up.
Right.
I went home early. That next morning, Becky comes in, and my wife, and she goes, what's wrong with you? Why'd you come home early? And I remember getting like sitting up from the bed and turning around, and she goes, oh my God, your face. And I said, oh, it's huge. Oh God. So I immediately started looking for a dentist, and there was actually somebody available over the weekend, but the guy was saying, I can't give you a root canal because it's not going to do anything. It's infected now that bad. Right. And, what he did was he drilled a hole in my tooth and in that molar, and was like trying to get it to come out through the tooth, but there wasn't enough of it coming out. Like it was that bad already. So by Monday, when the dentist who like actually had that practice, the guy who was working that weekend was just like a weekend dentist. Right. The guy who actually owned the practice, when I went in,
he didn't even work there at all. He's just like, oh, I tried to drill a hole in here. Right.
Yeah. He just did stuff on the weekend to fill in.
Right.
And so I end up talking to the other dentist, but I remember when I'm sitting there, he walks in, he goes, oh, your face too. And I thought, oh man, what the hell? Yeah. Cause I was kind of covering it, and I moved my hand, and he said that, he goes, we got to cut you open. I don't know why that other guy didn't cut you open. I said, I don't either, man, but this is the way I look now. And well, here's the rest of the story.
And it was bad. I mean, I was, you know, all grunting and moaning and breathing really heavy and stuff. And he says, can you feel this? And I said, yes.
No, I can't. What did you say to him?
Not
sir?
At all. Just because I'm sweating and breathing heavy. No, that doesn't mean nothing. But they ended up hitting me with another shot of anesthetic within one of the wounds that they slit open. And I could feel the needle going in. So, I mean, I was pretty much crying and everything else and blubbering and stuff. And he says, all right, we're going to take a break. So they walk off and I'm laying there and I try to sit up and I'm just. It was so bad, man. I mean, I was shaking and like, are you serious?
You know what? This is why women have babies.
Yes.
And not men.
Exactly. Because like I said, if men were to do that, it would be really bad. It'd be like throwing a hot dog in a microwave. But they come back a little bit afterwards and they're like, okay, we'll see you. You know, how does it feel now? And I said, I can't feel my face. Like I can touch it.
Good.
But I can't feel it.
Did he high five you? Is he
like, no, he was just like, all right. So I laid back down and starts going again. And all I could hear him cutting into it. You know, it was like cutting through steak or like cartilage and chicken or something. And he says, can you feel that? And I said, I can hear it, but I can't feel it. I said, just keep going. Oh, stop asking me questions.
Yeah, exactly. Stop talking to me. We're not Facebook friends.
I know. I understand. You're trying to make sure I'm fine. And I dig that. But oh, it was horrific.
He didn't care the first time around when you were so miserable. So
yeah.
Finish your job, guy.
Yeah. So that's what I've been dealing with for this past week. That's why, you know, like Whit was saying, we had postponed that other episode, but.
And that was my.
That was the experience.
Oh, dude, it was so, so bad. It was definitely an experience. And for those of you listening, if you want to listen to the rest of that episode, it is a great episode. We tell a lot of stories. It's also episode 12 is the very first one that Whitney and I were playing, or that we played 911 tapes. And it was a good one. It was a really good one. And Yeah, it was a good time. So from there, from that first time a few years ago, now fast forward years later to just a couple days ago. And actually, this started on this past Monday. So I had a toothache and it was my upper left wisdom tooth and it was killing me. And I thought, well, maybe I'm just drinking too much pop or something, or because I don't eat sweets. I mean, I do every now and then, but I'm not a big sweets person. So, excuse me. I thought it was because I was like chugging pop because we were coming back from Florida. We were coming back from vacation.
Yeah.
And I needed to stay awake because I was driving. And so I was just like drinking pop and coffee and stuff like crazy. And which I was surprised because usually I drink Red Bull and then I just stay like that. But I don't know, whatever reason, I was on a Mr. Pibb kick. And it's probably what destroyed that tooth. I don't know. Yeah, obviously, right. I had an issue already and that just messed it up. So I'm at work and it's Monday and my tooth is hurting. I'm taking ibuprofen like it's Skittles and it was killing me. And then Tuesday, killing me. And then Wednesday. And by Wednesday, dude, I say it was bad enough to where the pain was going up into my left temple and my left eye. And the only thing I could do was one, brush my teeth like crazy.
Cry.
A little bit of crying, a little bit of fetal position, and then take some more ibuprofen because that one actually takes the swelling down. And, oh man, what else was I doing? Oh, I had to buy beer so that I could eat because I couldn't open up my mouth wide enough. So I had to,
you're like, sorry guys, I have to buy beer.
I know. Right. I drank a couple of beers and I didn't even get buzzed or anything, but it must've done something because I was able to open my mouth a little bit wider so that I could actually eat. And then the next day I had to do a text to 911 demo and, I couldn't do it because my mouth was killing me that bad. And I was dizzy. But the worst part of it though, is when I woke up, I had a bubble on my gum.
Oh.
Yeah, dude, it was not good. So, I was getting ready to leave for work and I said to Becky, it's like, I got this bubble here. And she goes, I'm pretty sure you got an abscess. That thing is infected. And I said, well, if that thing pops, that's like poison, right? And she goes, well, it's pus, it's not good. And so I'm at work and I'm talking to one of our coworkers and I'm telling it because he says, I'll fill in for you for the demo if you can, you know, just I'll help you out. I'll call the dentist, call around to some dentists to see if somebody can get you in right away. And I said, all right, man, I'll set everything up so that you can do the demo. And he ends up pulling through. He gets a dentist for me and I set him up with the demo and stuff to everything so that he can do it. And then I take off. But before that, while we were setting things up, I had a bad taste in my mouth and I thought it's gotta be because I didn't brush my teeth because I couldn't open my mouth wide enough to even get my toothbrush in there. So
gross.
I know, right?
It had to be pretty bad then.
Oh yes, man. That's how bad it was. I couldn't open up my mouth to even brush my teeth. I did put a mint. I could slip a mint in, but that was like after
Altoid or something.
No, it was a lifesaver mint. Altoid would have been a lot better.
It probably would have hurt less.
Yeah, probably. I was able to get that in there and I was chewing it on the right side because I put it in after the bad taste in my mouth. And I was like, it's just got to be because of that. And I spit half of the mint out because I couldn't chew anymore. It was hurting. And then I just, after I spit it out, I happened to tongue in the back to feel that bubble. The bubble wasn't there.
It was a hole.
Yes. So that taste that I had in my mouth, it was because of that. So then I rush over to the dentist, I get in there and they see me and they're like, oh yeah, your face is, you know, got a little swelling on it. And they check it out and the dentist goes, whoa, that is an abscess that you have. And he goes, what have you been doing? I said, I've been chugging Mr. Pibb. And I said, but I've been brushing like crazy though, yeah. Either way, even before that. So I don't know what happened. He goes, well, you obviously had an issue before because they took an x-ray and stuff. And, So he had left and his assistant was there and I was telling her, you know, I had another issue a few years back and I was kind of telling her about what happened to the right side of my face. And I said, they had like 3 scalpels and they had to make incisions. And she goes, right. Oh, we're going to have to do that too. And I said, it's that bad. Yeah. I said, it's really that bad. And she goes, well, it's not that bad, but we still have to do it to drain it. And I said, okay. So the dentist comes back in, excuse me, and he's got this long Q-tip and he's got like some jelly on it. And he goes, I'm really sorry, man. And I said, sorry for what? And he goes, I'm sorry. I have to do this. And he's like, open your mouth. Dude, he shoved that thing all the way to the back of my mouth where that bubble was. And he was just like hitting it hard and rubbing it and rubbing it and rubbing it and rubbing it. And I'm holding onto the armrests for dear life, freaking out. And he goes, I'm so sorry. And he's just like, rah, rah. Oh dude, it hurt bad. Well, because he didn't, like he had not
into the wound.
Well, because he had to make it drain more. Cause then his assistant ended up putting that thing in to suck the stuff out. Mm-hmm. So they had to do that first, because if they would have given me those shots, it would have just been going into the crap that was there and it wouldn't do anything. So I wasn't numbed up or anything. He was just hitting it hard. And I was like, oh my God, this is so bad. He gave me 4 shots before they could even start doing anything. Because after the 3, it started to get a little numb, but I could still feel some pain.
Right.
He had one of those, the I don't even know what it's called. It's one of the instruments that has the hook on it.
Right.
And he put it back there and he's digging at one of my molars. And he says, can you feel that? And I said, no, I don't feel that. And then he goes back to the wisdom tooth and he hits it. And he goes, did you feel that? And I said, yes.
Yeah,
I said, I can feel that still. And he goes, all right, we're going to give you another shot. So he gives another shot in right in that gum where the tooth is at. And that hurt like hell. And then he gave me a few more shots around the top of my, like the roof of my mouth. And that actually did not hurt. However, he walked off and immediately half of my nose was numb. And, and it was the weirdest thing, man. Half of my nose, my left half of my nose was numb. And part of my left eye, I could feel it, that it was like getting numbish.
Lazy or something.
Yeah. Falling. I was like, no, I'm not going to say it.
Right. Oh, I know exactly what you're thinking. I bet you I know exactly what you're thinking.
Yeah, you
about,
do. Yeah, you do. Oh, man.
Ghost dog.
Ghost dog. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So.
Oh, yeah. It was as if I had Dayquil and Nyquil at the same time. My left eye was like droopy. It was weird. And they come back in and they said, all right, how are you feeling? I said, all of this is numb. I said, go, like, do it.
Do it now.
Dude, it took forever. But I could hear them, like the crank on my tooth. I could hear it crack and pop. And then they finally got it out and stuff. And he goes, yeah, because that was really in there. And then he shakes my hand. He goes, it was very nice meeting you, Ricardo. You know, I didn't think that I was going to, you know, do something like this today. It's been kind of slow and stuff. And I got to do this. So this was great. I'd have to say that this was in my top 5 of abscesses that I've dealt with. And wow. I shook He's his like, hand and I said,
out of 5,
I shook his hand and I said, oh, all right, well, glad I was able to help.
Right.
Oh, man.
I'm glad I could give you that experience.
Yeah, exactly. So now I can only, the tooth is gone. Thank the Lord. And I just had to now chew on my right side like forever now. Yeah. So that completely sucked. But that's just one of the things that made up this whole week of being crazy. It was nuts. But to segue from that, one of the things that happened as well is this whole movement that has started. It's the hashtag #IAM911 movement. And one of the calls that I haven't shared it on the Within the Trenches page or Twitter or anything yet, because there's so much to it, and it was something that really affected me. So I actually wrote about it, and I shared that part of it. I shared, and I just said that it was one of my own personal stories, my own IAM911 story, and it was called A Moment of Clarity. So if you've not read it, go to thejabberlog.com or just Google the Jabberlog space, A Moment of Clarity, and it'll pop up as well. And it was one of the calls that I took years ago, when I was working for Allegan Central Dispatch. And, I'll just talk about it right now, because my brother was involved. However, it was at the very end of it, because I needed to talk to him in order to get through it. Excuse me. So it was about 3 or 3:30 in the morning. There wasn't a lot going on, but of course in dispatch, there are times when there's nothing going on, believe it or not. And then out of nowhere, the shit hits the fan. So that's pretty much what happened with this one. I was sitting at the lien console, which is where, you know, we run our license and warrants and all that other stuff. It's also backup phones and radios. And I'm sitting there, and this phone call comes in, and I hear screaming. And it's what I thought at first was that it was two females that were screaming, and it was just nuts. It was just screaming and screaming and screaming. And I'm saying, ma'am, can you hear me? Can you hear me? And then I had learned this technique when I very first started dispatching, actually in Florida. And, our instructor there told us, you know, if you ever get a call where somebody is just screaming, just start whispering, bring your voice down to about a whisper. And it almost like tricks the person, I guess, in a way, you know, where they think that there's nobody there. Because when they're screaming and you're talking to them, or you're trying to talk over them or get louder, they hear it, but they don't hear your words. They just hear the sound. So when you're whispering, it makes them stop for a moment. And that's what happened. That's what I did. I ended up whispering, and she stopped, and she asked, is there somebody there? So I immediately jumped in and started going through my line of questioning. And I was asking her, you know, who the other female is that's there. And she goes, that's actually my boyfriend. Now, before I got to that part that I found out that it was a boyfriend, I was asking her what happened. And she was saying that somebody had shot themselves. Well, she's still, you know, screaming. I'm trying to calm her down, get the address, all that other information. We've got officers that are heading out there. And, you know, when I find out that this is the brother that's, or her boyfriend that's screaming in the background, you know, I'm still asking what exactly happened. And I was able to get her calm. And this call had to have been only about 5 or so minutes, but it seemed like forever the way it was going. And what had happened was that her boyfriend's brother, he was depressed, and his girlfriend or fiance, I can't remember which one it was, but the pretty much the love of his life ended up leaving him. She didn't want him anymore, and he was completely depressed about it. He ended up going to stay with them for a little while, and he kept saying that, you know, there was nothing left for him, that he wanted to kill himself. And, you know, they kept hearing that. And then they ended up going out to the bar. They all had a few drinks and stuff, and they came back home, and he said it again. He was standing outside of the house, and he was telling his brother, you know, I don't have anything to live for anymore. I want to kill myself. So his brother ends up going inside the house, gets a loaded shotgun, and hands it to him outside of the house and says, well, if you're going to do it, go ahead and do it. Now, he wasn't thinking he was going to do it. And I know this because I heard the brother yelling in the background of this phone call saying, I can't believe he did it. I didn't think he was going to do it. And when the brother took the gun, he did it. He shot himself in the head right outside of the house. Now, this was wintertime, and I remember that because, and it was like, it's like yesterday living through this call. I remember saying to his girlfriend, you know, the police are on their way and the ambulance, you know, anything that I could say to let her know that help was on the way, to try to, you know, keep her calm. And I remember her telling her boyfriend that, you know, the police are on their way, the ambulance is coming. And I remember him yelling at the top of his lungs, what's the ambulance going to do? My brother's face is splattered all over the snow. And all I could think of at the time when I was taking this call was my brother. And it was just nuts that this was going on. I'm staying professional. I'm doing what I have to do. But in the back of my head, I'm thinking about my own family. And as I as we're going through this, the girl's boyfriend ends up coming back inside the house. And I remember hearing him yell, "I don't deserve to live. I'm going to kill myself too." And he gets the shotgun. And I remember her yelling, "He's got the shotgun. He's got the shotgun." And I'm telling her, "Get out of there, go to a different room, go somewhere where you're safe." And he goes outside and then he comes back inside with the gun and he puts it down and he goes back outside again. And I just hear him screaming from outside. And I've got her on the phone still. And she said, he put down the gun. And I said, "Get the gun and put it away, hide it somewhere." So she does. And all of this is going on. And the officers finally get out there. They secure the scene. I get off the line with her and she says, thanks to me. And I said, "You know, don't worry about it. That's what I'm here for." And I hung up with her and I remember just sitting there and not knowing what else was going on, but thinking in my head, the officers are out there. They see this guy, you know, he's screaming, he's beside himself, and his brother is out there dead. And the girlfriend's, she's just inside. She's trying to do whatever she can. So I'm just sitting there thinking about all this that's going on. And I remember turning around and looking at my supervisor and she says to me, "Are you okay?" And I said, I don't know. "Yeah, I'll be fine." I said, "I'll be fine." And she goes, "Are you sure?" And I said, yeah, I'll be fine. And it was one of those moments where, you know, when you're working in a job like that, you don't want to show that you're weak, which is pretty stupid now that I think about it, because there are a lot of times where I did that and I didn't talk to anybody. It was only when I started writing about all of this and podcasting about it and all of that, when I was in dispatch, that it was, you know, it was therapeutic. I was able to get that out, but I should have spoke to somebody then. And so I told her, yeah, it was fine. But in the back of my head, I knew it wasn't fine. I knew that as soon as I got out of work, that I needed to call my brother and hopefully he was going to be awake. So I go through the rest of the shift. There was probably only about 2.5 hours left. And it's probably, I don't know, 10 to 5 in the morning. And I split and I'm still weirded out about the whole call. I was replaying it in my head and replaying it in my head. And I call my brother Fernando. On the way home, it was as soon as I left dispatch, I called him up. And I remember I'm on the phone and I'm saying out loud, "Come on, man, pick up. Come on, man, pick up." And then he picks up and he's half awake and he goes, "Hello?" And I said, "I love you, dude." And I remember you're like, "What? Yeah, what happened?
What's going on?" Really? Because it was... I mean, like I said, I don't even, like you said, it was way early in the morning. I was asleep. I didn't know what was going on. And I just get this call out of nowhere. And then it's you telling me that you love me. And I'm like, well, holy cow, you know, what the hell happened? I know. Well, I mean, as horrible as it is to say, is like, somebody like passed away. Like, what happened? You know, like something bad must have happened. Like, I instantly felt like this drop in my gut, like something was wrong or something, you know? Like,
right. Yeah.
Because I mean, I tell you, I love you all day, whatever, you know, but just randomly out of the blue like that in the wee hours in the morning, I guess, you know, it's like something bad happened, you know? Right. Like, kind of freaked me out.
All right, man. Right. So what, either you're going to tell me you won the lottery or somebody died.
Right. Well, so, it didn't sound like lottery.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's, yeah, that's sure. That's not the, it's not a good, yeah, not the lottery. Definitely was not the lottery. So I ended up telling him the story and exactly what happened. And I said, you know, I needed to talk to you. I said, I just needed to talk to you. I don't know why, but I feel a lot better about it. And I remember after that, as soon as I said that, he goes, oh, I love you too, man. Oh man, that call, oh man, that is definitely a straight up hashtag I am 911 call. So segueing from that to this movement, you know, calls like that is exactly what this movement is about. It's about showing how, you know, 911 dispatchers differ from clerical workers, commercial dispatchers. I mean, that's what this whole thing is about. Now, when I started this last week, and I remember the day, mainly because there's actually been some news media and stuff that has reached out, and they asked about when I did this, and it was August 24th, so just about a week ago. And the reason was because APCO International, you know, they started this whole push for the reclassification of 911 dispatchers or public safety telecommunicators to go from, you know, being in the clerical class to protective. And, you know, they were going up against the OMB, and I believe that's the Office of Management and Budget. And the proposal ended up getting rejected. So they ended up, you know, they wanted dispatchers, you know, directors, the public, you know, everybody to go to their website, fill out this, it's a form. There's a bunch of information on there, but there's a public comments that are open until September 16th, 2016 to be sent over so that, you know, so that we can fight for this. So they started doing this. Well, NEMA, the National Emergency, Number Association, they ended up getting into it as well. And they have, if you go to their website, you'll find what they have. So each organization has something that they're doing for the same purpose. Now, one of the pieces that really caught my eye was the story part of this. And, you know, there, it says in there, you know, share a story or share, you know, some sort of protocol or something like that. Well, I wanted to share a story. And because we need to show how we differ from the clerical workers and, you know, commercial dispatchers such as taxi and, you know, trucking companies and et cetera. So what I wanted to do was I wanted to start a movement, the hashtag I am 911 movement, in order to show how we differ, to assist in this effort and reclassification for both organizations. And I shared a story. So the first story that I shared, I just wanted to share a snippet, just something small and, you know, put out there. This is, you know, this is to assist in this effort, you know, joining the movement, share your story. So my first one was, I heard your last breath the night you flipped your four wheeler. Hashtag I am 911. And in episode 114, I ended up, you know, telling more about that story and what happened with that. But since that, almost overnight, it ended up exploding. And I'm going to give you some numbers here just for that one post alone. The amount of people reached was 427,205 with 3,261 shares and 1,700 reactions. And it's been going ever since. Now, I may have started this. This may have been my idea and everything, but this movement wouldn't be what it is without the entire Thin Gold line. All of your stories is what's been pushing this, and continue to share. I mean, this has been trending. This has been on Facebook, trending on Twitter. You know, the news media is getting a hold of this, and it's getting out there. I mean, it's big enough to the point where there's a hashtag IM999. There were some British dispatchers actually, and well, around Europe that are using 999. They started doing this as well. They joined the movement, as well as dispatchers out of Australia. And it's hashtag IM000. That's how big this has gotten. It's global. It's not just here in the United States. Everybody is sharing stories. It's completely blown up. Another story that was shared is actually one that I posted here earlier. today. It is, we became pretty good friends. When you passed, I was shocked. I stayed strong through your funeral, but I lost it during your last call, your end of watch. Until that day, Sergeant, hashtag I am 911. Now, there are stories all on here, and if you want to read them, go to Facebook, facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast, and look at the album. My excellent admin team, I can't tell you enough how much they've been helping me out with this to get all these messages, because I posted the other day that we have 1,000 plus messages on here, but it's probably even higher than that now, because each time I go in there to work on one to share, there's about five or six more that go in, and it is completely fine. Continue to share, because this is how we're going to get it going. This is our time to show what dispatch is all about, who we are and what we do. And it's completely exploded. I mean, there are stories from callers that are putting messages in, and it's an I am 911 story. However, it's from the caller side, and they're talking about, you know, what they're doing. So here's one of them. And I'm just going to pull it up here really quick, because it was crazy to see this, that this was coming in, but it was good. It's a good thing is what I'm saying. So this one, I put in a note, not every, I am 911 story is in a meme. Some of them are in notes, and you can see those when you go on the page on the right side. There's a section that says notes. You can click on that and you can read them. So this one is an hashtag I am 911 story from the other side. And it says, you were the one on the other end of that phone. I called for help and could only give you my address before I had to hang up. I was being beat and needed the police. You sent help. You were my angel that night. I'm still here because of you. That's powerful. That's compelling. That's a caller that's putting this message in. There's other messages from people just in the comments. A retired battalion, a fire battalion chief, he ended up putting a post on there, or a comment on one of the posts, saying that, you know, we are the first responders, and he thanked dispatchers for doing what they do. I mean, there's messages all over the place, and you know, you all do a thankless job, and it's coming out. It's out now. The movement is here, and people are reading. Their eyes are being opened, and it's nuts. I mean, just a few more numbers to share with you from the album alone, so that you know how far your stories are going and that people are listening and sharing this. The album alone has 29,000 reactions. The amount of shares are 219,075. That's huge. That is huge. The engagements alone, the post engagements, those are shares, likes, posts, everything combined is over 31 million. That's what this movement is about. This grassroots movement that has been going on. And like I said before, I might have started this. This might have been my idea and everything to start this movement to assist in the reclassification, but it's because of your stories that you shared is what made this happen, because I could do this all I wanted, but it would be nothing without your stories. So thank you. I thank all of you for joining this movement, for those that are going to continue to share your stories, those that are thinking about joining the movement or sharing something. Just get it out there. Share it with us in a message, in a meme, in text. We'll put it out there. We'll do it on Twitter. We'll do it on Facebook. But like I said, this is our time. I'm a firm believer in don't wait for an opportunity, create it. And that's what this movement has done. And it's opened the eyes of many to what you do every single day. So thank you. Now that I'm done with my rant. That's, oh man, that's how passionate I am about this.
Yeah, well, I understand, because that kind of stuff a lot of people, you know, average person doesn't know what it is that dispatchers do or what they go through when they do the things that they do. Or it's, I wouldn't know if you weren't my brother, you know,
right.
Or if I had been, if I even like do what I do and being involved in it in a way, I would never know. I would think the same thing, like how you had mentioned earlier, it being people thinking it being akin to like some dispatching taxi cab service or security thing or something, you know, like,
right. Yeah.
It's not even close to what it is. It's not even in the same, you know, universe. It's not that at all whatsoever.
Well, yeah, because I ended up going through a lot of stuff when I was working in dispatch, but when you were out in Rock Island, Illinois, when you were working and stuff, there was actually somebody there that was talking about the hashtag I am 911 movement, right?
Yeah, there was, there's a couple of dispatchers sitting there talking and they were, she was looking at her phone. I guess they were reading a couple of little things back and forth and talking about the whole movement and everything that was going on. And I was just thinking to myself, it's like, are they talking about what I think they're talking about? And as she's sitting there talking to the other dispatcher, she's talking about, I guess she had went home the day before or whatever. And her son was there looking at her phone and she was like asking him, you know, what he was looking at or whatever. And he looks up at her and, you know, tells her, you know, this is what you do, you know, like,
oh, so he was reading it.
Yeah, he was reading all the little stories and stuff. And I mean, I can't remember exactly what she said or whatever, but, you know, just didn't realize that that was the stuff that, you know, I guess the dispatchers go through, the work that she actually did. Because wow. Like everybody else, they just think that you just, oh, you just pick up the phone and that's it and whatever.
But, right. Yeah.
But then, you know, when you actually sit and you know, if you want to go through them and read them, you know, that's real. that's not fake or made up things. Like as crazy as some of those things are, like I've sat in dispatch centers myself, you know, doing what I do, making those things, you know, helping to make those things work, at least what dispatchers use, you know, as far as technology and equipment that goes into it.
And
all that.
And for those who don't know, my brother works for the same company that I do, and he's one of the field techs. So he goes out and he does from the tech side for 911, and he, you know, he's hooking up the, you know, the phones, the wires, all that other stuff to make sure that everything works. So he's in the PSAP and he hears all of this. And yes, so go ahead.
So I hear it in the background all the time, and you know, just being exposed to it like that. If I didn't do what I did, I would think the same thing. Like, be like, whatever, some dispatcher, they just pick up the phone, just like some whatever, you know,
right?
Like how they have it classified, like a clerk, but that's not what it is. It's nothing like that whatsoever. And I mean, even just this past week, being in Rock Island, like, it was crazy the things that were going on in that city. And I mean, there was an instance where there was like a construction worker who was killed. Somebody hit him. Some person was speeding, whatever. They killed him right, not even far from where I was working. And the next day I'm in another center because I'm sitting there. I was working there all week. And,
right.
And it's on the news. They're talking about it and everything. And I heard the whole thing as it was going on, as they were dispatching and everything was happening. And it's crazy to see that because, I mean, nobody knows about it, but the dispatch is the first ones every single time.
Right. Yeah. That's what's freaking nuts. And crazy. That's what this whole thing is going on. So it's funny that she was saying, you know, that her son was reading through those and was like, this is what you do. You know, you don't tell me about it or anything like that. And that was kind of the same way, you know, when I came home, and I would tell Becky about some of my really bad calls. And I remember we would be, you know, hanging out at a cookout or a birthday party or whatever with a bunch of the officers. And I would start telling funny stories. And she would immediately say, why don't you ever tell me those stories? Why don't you tell me the funny ones? And I'm thinking, I do, I want to, but I need to get out the bad ones.
Right.
So... yeah, so that's
because you can ask a dispatcher about a funny one. They'll definitely tell you about
well,
it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I remember when I was dispatching, I remember somebody calling in and it happened multiple times, but I remember them telling me, you know, my taxes pay for your salary, dispatcher. And I said, excuse me? And the person says, yeah, you got to do what I say. You know, I pay for you to live. And I remember just sitting there.
Really?
Oh yeah. It was pretty bad. I remember sitting there biting my lip because I wanted to talk smack back, but I knew that I couldn't. I knew that I had to just take it. And I remember the person just telling me, you know, you just answer the phone. You just, you know, you just get your paper, you just get the call out to whoever. That's all you do. You don't do anything else. And in my head, I'm thinking, man, you have no idea. Before, right, before I talked to your dick face, I ended up giving CPR to somebody.
Right.
And I listened to someone die, you know, and the people don't know that.
Right.
So what's going on now, people are learning. And this whole reclassification thing, I mean, it's very important. It's a huge thing. So those that are listening, go to the websites of APCO as well as NINA, look for their forms, fill out what you have to fill out, but also keep sharing these stories because this is what has made it so big, what has made it so important, what this fight is all about. It's your stories showing what you do, and people are learning, and that's one of the best things. So if you have any comments or questions or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us, and that's going to be wttpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, and that's going to be @901podcast, as well as you can like us on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. And once again, remember, if you want to submit one of your stories for the #IAM901movement or IM999 or IM000, you can go to the same Facebook page, facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast, send a message, do a visitor post, either in text or meme or even a video. You know, you can do it either way. We will post it, we will share it, we will get it out there. People are looking at this, and over people are looking at this and sharing and liking and commenting, and it's all about you. You guys are doing this job and you do an amazing job. Again, thank you so much for joining in this movement, and we're going to continue. Again, the deadline for public comment is September 20th, 2016. So let's get as many in there as we can and get this reclassified. Also, for the show, you can hear the show 24/7 on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, Google Play Music, and now, excuse me, streaming on iHeartRadio. Again, this episode is sponsored by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. Have a good one, everybody.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to wttpodcast@gmail.com.